Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. And with me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I am wide awake for a change.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm glad you're able to pull yourself out of bed and be all bright-eyed and chipper.
And bushy-tailed.
And bushy-tailed. Yep. And here you are.
Here I am.
I'm great to have you here today. Well, I'm glad to have you here today.
Me too.
Work on English as a first language. Anyhow, hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Casper, the mattress company, which I think is so awesome because I'm a user of their mattresses. And as a matter of fact, this morning when I pulled myself out of bed, it was a Casper mattress that I climbed off of. I really like their mattresses. I was a skeptic at first because, well, before I actually got one, because they're a laminated or sandwiched latex foam mattress thing. And I've always had this thing about the foam mattresses. They've never worked for me. But this one is done right. It's comfortable. It works well for me. It actually helps me sleep, which is so awesome. And I think everyone deserves the chance to be able to sleep as good as, well, even better than I do, but to be able to sleep really well. So you need to go check them out. And do that at their website. It's casper.com/TDO. Now, here's what makes this really great. The mattresses that they sell are really high quality, and they cost less than comparable products. So I have the queen size mattress, which is perfect for me, $850. Anywhere else, it'd be costing you over $1,000. But since they don't have their showroom anywhere, they can sell for less, which is awesome. When you use that URL I just gave you, casper.com/TDO, you're going to get $50 off your order. So you can pick up the queen-size mattress that I have for $800. And the awesome thing is I've actually heard back from show listeners saying that they have bought Casper mattresses and that they are really liking them. So that is so cool. It makes me feel good. No, it's better to say you guys have validated me, told me that my purchase was a smart move, and yours is too. So go check them out. Get yourself a Casper mattress for an awesome price, $50 off regular price, casper.com/TDO. And thank you, Casper, for being our sponsor today.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so now that we are both awake and bushy-tailed, fresh from our mattresses, I wanted to take a look at something that we haven't really dove into yet on Daily Observations, which is exactly why I wanted you here, John. And this is something that's been bugging me for a while. And after some of our discussions earlier this morning, I realized it's bugging you too. And that's the Mac Pro.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, I think the Mac Pro is a great computer, but the fact that it's, what, over 2 years old now?
Yes, 2.3 years to be precise.
And we are still on the original model.
I have my Spock ears on.
Of course you do, and they make you look cute. Yeah, so we're over 2 years into the original Mac Pro, the trash can Mac Pro, because I know there are some pedants out there that would be like, that's not the original Mac Pro. Original Mac Pro is a cheese grater. Anyhow, the computer's unchanged from the original model. And I've been watching what's happening with other companies, and especially companies like HP and their Z series.
Yeah.
And they just released new computers a couple weeks ago, and those computers are just running circles from a performance standpoint around the Mac Pro.
Well, even the new 27-inch 5K Retina iMac is faster than the low-end quad-core Mac Pro that I have, by a little bit. I should mention two things. First of all, the timeline. The black cylinder Mac Pro was announced at WWDC in June of 2013. Apple said it would start shipping in December of 2013, but the wait period was awesome, and you really couldn't get your hands on one within a reasonable period of time, say a 1 week delay until April or May. I got mine in May of 2014. And so most of them started showing up around that time. So I have one, and I've been using it as my primary machine for Mac Observer. I love it. It's nice. It's fast. But when one thinks about the kind of computer that it is, one thinks that because you pay a lot for it and you're being aggressive in your use of it, and often it's used for scientific computing or CAD or things like that, you would like to see Apple supporting it. And there's different ways to support a product like that. One is to, you know, introduce processor updates pretty much on an annual basis, like Apple does with the iMac. Or you could take the philosophy that, you know, it's such a strong computer, we don't have to update it every year. We can update it every 2 years. But 2 years came and went. Nothing happened. And we got new iMacs yesterday, but nothing about the Mac Pro. The other way to support a machine like that is to have infrastructure around it. You know, it's a machine that's well appreciated in advanced computation circles, research and scientific computing and visualization. So, you know, if you're immersed in that community and you're talking to customers and you're showing support for development tools and things like that, then people go, okay, we're constantly in touch with Apple. We see what's going on. We see their plan. They're communicating with us. They're updating the development, the scientific tools. They're making it easier on us. There's a dialogue. And so you kind of get the feeling like there's energy there, and that even though Apple hasn't announced any follow-on, because of that dialogue and that energy and that support, you kind of get the feeling that, you know, there's another model on the way. But when apple.com/science is long gone and hasn't been resurrected, and Apple says nothing, and I talked to one scientific computing fan of the Mac Pro recently, and he says it's getting harder and harder to install these tools and make them work, you know, certain compilers and things like Eclipse and the GDB debugger and things like that. It's getting a little bit, you know, difficult to kind of restore each version of OS X to the Unix glory of scientific computing as it was in the classic days of, say, Snow Leopard. Mm-hmm. So he was getting concerned about that. So when that dialogue isn't there, the energy isn't there, little things happen in OS X that give you pause, and then there's no announcement, you kind of feel like, hey, we're kind of just left all alone and wondering what's going to happen, and then you lose faith. Then you wonder about Apple's commitment, and Tim Cook is always talking about re-energizing the enterprise. But when Tim Cook talks about the enterprise, he's talking about iPhones and iPads.
Right. I think so, too.
Right. So the general feeling in the community may well be that, you know, this was a wonderful machine. It was brilliant. It was beautiful. It was beautifully engineered, fabulous architecture and fan and infrastructure and bus structure and so on, except for the ability to add cards. Generally not a problem. So the net result is that after this initial explosion of enthusiasm, and you think, wow, Apple's going to carry this forward for all time and get better and better, instead, all of a sudden, it languishes. And that creates a sense of ennui and annoyance and bewilderment about what Apple's up to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it created actually a sense of disappointment. And that stems from the fact that we went so long before the trash can shape or the cylinder Mac Pro without an upgrade to the Mac Pro line. And people would occasionally say, yeah, but the processor upgrade that the cheese graters got. Well, that wasn't because Apple really wanted to upgrade the processor. It's because the processor was so old, Intel quit making it. Apple had to put a new chip in there. And so when the cylinder Mac Pro came out, I had a very guarded enthusiasm for it. And now here we are, as you've said, 2.3 years since it was introduced, and still nothing. And that enthusiasm has changed to disappointment. And my feeling is that whenever Apple does upgrade the Mac Pro again, that I will be in a position where I won't be enthusiastic about it, because my assumption is it'll be exactly what they done before. There's a track record now. Release a new machine that has some really great specs, and then essentially abandon it for several years.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote about that an article a while back about the two sides of Apple, the brilliance and the ennui. It's hard to calibrate Apple sometimes. They go in these bursts. It could be, and Adam Christensen in our morning meeting made an interesting comment about how sometimes you get the feeling that Apple creates these products as fringe cases for people who want to just, you know, be on the upper side of a computing spectrum and have a little toy. But when you create something that brilliant and that well engineered and that fast, it's natural that a lot of people are going to seize upon it as their favorite computing tool, because, you know, nothing's changed with OS X in this regard. It's a great scientific computing platform. Yeah, true, if you're going to run clusters or you're going to run specific tasks in scientific computing, or you need special compilers, yeah, Linux is the answer. But it's really great for a professor or a researcher to have a Mac on their desk powered by a Mac Pro, because you can run Microsoft Office. You can run one of the virtual machines like VMware Fusion or Parallels Desktop, and you can run Linux as a virtual machine on your system. You've got the elegance and the beauty of Mac operating system, OS X El Capitan, which is pretty cool in terms of security and convenience and notifications and all the services that are available to you. So you've really got an integrated, beautiful platform. It's the world's best GUI on top of BSD Unix. So it has a warm place in the hearts of scientists. And of course, you can use the Linux system as a virtual machine to connect to a supercomputer from there. So you've really got the whole package. And so that's another reason why, you know, engineers and scientists and researchers are enthusiastic about the Mac. And so if you've got a really cool and fast Mac you can do local computing on, mm-hmm. like the Mac Pro, then you're thinking, wow, this is the machine I want. And then you find out that, you know, some of your colleagues are working on some really, really cool, you know, parallel processing Linux machines from Hewlett Packard and running circles around you, and you go, oh, come on, Apple, you know, show some support, show me some love. And you're left in the dark.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem, because there are a lot of organizations that are looking at the pro-level computers that they need to accomplish whatever their tasks are. And in this case, we'll stick with science, since you know a lot about that. And if you have a machine that looks very compelling, but when you look at the specs and you're like, oh, well, actually, the technology in this machine is between 2 and 3 years old, or I can get this other machine for the same price or even less that is modern technology and is going to let me run all the Linux stuff that I need, then why would I want to go with the old technology? And right. That I think that's an argument that's getting harder and harder for Apple to overcome. I know for a lot of people, the Mac Pro is the right computer. And I think that's awesome. But I think there are a lot of environments where it's becoming increasingly difficult, if not impossible, to justify buying the Mac Pro. And I'm wondering if Apple's really going to be able to do anything about that.
I think Apple's maybe a little bit overconfident about OS X. And they kind of feel like, well, if you want to have OS X, you know, you got to buy a Mac. And so here's our best Mac. But from my experience, having worked for Apple and worked in sales to scientific organizations, it's a split. There's maybe a quarter of the people who are fanatic and just hooked on Apple and whine when Apple doesn't support them or communicate with them, but they really love Apple products and they love the ease of use and the convenience of it. And then there's the three quarters of them, and that usually includes the department director who makes the purchase decisions, and they're off and running on Linux and high-performance chips and clusters and all of the tools that are available in Linux to them, and no worries about issues and development problems or sandboxing or security issues. You know, you've got a Linux system. You can recompile the kernel if you need to modify it for performance.
See, those are all compelling things.
The guys at the South Pole did that. My wife worked for the Antarctic program for a while, and she ran into the guys who were doing the neutrino detector at the South Pole, and they were recompiling the Linux kernel to suit them because they wanted to strip out a whole bunch of stuff. So, you know, that's what sharp scientists do, and Linux is a great platform for them. And when we get really, really, really serious about science and scientific computing, you're running Linux. And all the supercomputers, like the ones at Oak Ridge National Lab, Roadrunner, and the big ones at Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, they're all running Linux.
Yeah. Hey, we are getting close to being out of time. So there's another piece of old technology that Apple is still selling that I wanted to get your take on real quick. What do you think about the Apple Thunderbolt display?
Oh, don't get me started. Oh, my. Yes. Yes, I was in the Apple store at the local mall recently, and I was looking at the Mac Pro just to make sure that they even still had a Mac Pro in the store. And there's one little Mac Pro lonely over in the side panel, and they've got a Apple 27-inch Thunderbolt display. I was trying to remember how old that thing is. You see,
I think they're about 7 years old now.
I bought my 24-inch Cinema display in 2009, and then I think about a year later, Apple upgraded it to the 27-inch Cinema, and then they converted it to Thunderbolt only. Yeah,
So maybe 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. And the thing about this display is that it's no longer state-of-the-art, and it's very expensive. It has USB 2 ports, yawn. It has a FireWire 800 port, yawn. It's thick on the edges, like you would expect from a computer, not a display. It has the old MagSafe connector. It's primarily a Thunderbolt device. It doesn't have a lot of extra ports like HDMI, and I believe you can plug it into a computer that has DisplayPort, but it's really an appalling piece of hardware for $1,000, and I've been making fun of Apple about that ever since I bought my new Hewlett-Packard display back last Christmas, and I wrote an article about my quest to replace my iMac, because I handed down my 27-inch iMac to my wife, and so I need a new display for, guess what, my new Mac Pro. And while the 24-inch Cinema sits on the side, and it's nice, and it has the FaceTime camera, I was really looking for a better high-end display for my work, and I needed a resolution greater than 1920 by 1400. So I bought this fabulous Hewlett-Packard Z27i, mm-hmm. which is an IPS display, and it is the intermediate resolution. It's 2440 by 1400, is that right?
It's a nice display.
I've seen that. It's an IPS version 2 display, and it's crisp, and it's bright, and it's clear, and it's adjustable. Oh, the height is adjustable. Unlike the Thunderbolt display, the height is adjustable. So you can put it on the same height as the display next to it. When you buy the Apple Thunderbolt display, you can tilt it forward and back, but you can't raise it or lower it, so you can't match the height to a sister display that's next to it. So it's the Apple Thunderbolt display is old, it's expensive, it's out of date. Why Apple still sells it, I don't know. I guess because they need something to sit next to the aging Mac Pro.
Well, my assumption is they're selling it because enough people are buying it to justify continue making it.
Yeah, enough. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yawn.
All right. Yeah. And you said you have an HP display on your desk. I actually have a 34-inch HP display on my desk right now that I'm testing. And it costs the same as Apple's old Thunderbolt display.
Well, I have the Hewlett-Packard Z27S that I'm testing. This is a 4K display, and it is awesome. And it is $669 retail.
Yeah, see, that's crazy. Yeah. All right, so Apple needs to update the Mac Pro. They need to decide if they're going to stay in the display business. And if they are, then they need to seriously update their Thunderbolt display.
Right.
And with that, we're out of time.
Well, this has been cool.
It's been a lot of fun. And this is exactly why I wanted you on today.
Get my rant pants on.
Yeah. Every now and then it's fun to pull up those ranty pants. And with the Mac Pro and the Thunderbolt display, I figured, well, who better to rant in an intelligent way?
Who better?
That's right.
Gentleman John.
That's right. So, John, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And Casper, thank you so much for being our sponsor today. And head over to their website, casper.com/TDO, and check out their mattresses. Pick one out for yourself. And even though we can't sleep in the same bed, we can sleep in the same bed. And it'll be just awesome. We can compare notes. And listeners, thank you for being here today. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.